Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
John McClain is with us. Time to talk some NFL headlines and preview week one across the National Football League. John, how are you? What did you think of the game last night?
I thought it was terrible. The rain delay zapped a lot of the enthusiasm. Ratings were down. Ratings were down because it was an awful game. The officials made it even worse. The end of the game was exciting, but only exacerbated the problems Matt Ryan and the Falcons have in the red zone, not having Julio Jones in the lineup when you're going for third and fourth down in the red zone was bad coaching. And I thought, no wonder ratings. Truthfully, I watched it. I stopped watching it, watched it again, and watched the end. And I thought the same thing. You know, not one penalty was called for the helmet, which is what everyone was worried about in preseason. But if a game is sloppy like that, as you guys mentioned, it's not just the exhaustion. It was only 81 degrees at kickoff. Give me a bleeping break about players being exhausted. The problem is they're sloppy because they don't play in preseason. Hopefully it was just the Falcons and the Eagles and is not going to be the rest of the NFL.
The one penalty that got the most attention is this. It was a Grady Jackson landing on the quarterback. This idea that a guy can control his body weight at the end of a sack or a hit in a way as to not effectively land on the quarterback. Another thing, I think a more reasonable argument, really, than the helmet thing, which you can control, is this idea that at the last second you're able. I mean, we also saw the low hit on the quarterback from Long, right? Which, you know, is a good play. He's breaking through. He's got to hit him. But how is this weight on the quarterback penalty going to work in your eyes?
Well, it's not. And another one, think if Atlanta got an extra down on a penalty that should have never been called, said they, I guess, on Austin Hooper, the tight end, I didn't see it over the middle. I thought it was a terrible call. It gave them another play. Can you imagine if Atlanta had completed it and won, how that penalty would be getting scrutinized today? I think the officials, you know, they need training camp too, but it was just an awful start. And if you go back, I think it was Pro Football Talk went over the ratings for the last four or five openers. They've been down every year.
What do you think the league office, Troy Vincent, and others were thinking on that Julio Jones catch that was ruled an incompletion?
You talking about on the sideline of the end zone?
Sideline, but not in the end zone, but the sideline where he has it pinned against his helmet. I thought it was a catch.
No,
here we are debating a catch or a non-catch.
Usually, I see this with DeAndre Hopkins sometimes, and we've seen it with Julio Jones too, that you can't get the ball to both hands, so you pin it against your helmet where everybody can see it, and that's the first time I've seen that it was ruled not a non-catch.
You see it, Paul?
Yeah, I thought it was catch.
I did too.
And I mean, I thought one of the encouraging things about the game last night was the replay review catch stuff was back to an old standard. Like, if it's called a catch on the field, they're going to lean very heavily towards calling it a catch. Peterson made kind of a 4-yard challenge on one that didn't really seem
I didn't understand that challenge.
Worth it. Now, I saw one analytics person defending it, you know, that every yard down there changes things, and so 4 yards there are a lot more valuable than somewhere else.
And Peterson would know those numbers.
But still, it seemed not worth it. But it also seems like you're not going to win that now, right? And I think we like that, going back to the basics. But so that could have been the storyline about catches, and then you've got the missed call on Julio Jones.
John, is there a chance that Steve Sarkisian doesn't see it to the end of the year as the play caller in Atlanta?
Chad, it's too early to say that. Remember last year, everybody was torching him early because he had made the late transition. Now, if that offense continues to operate that poorly and Matt Ryan making some really bad decisions down there, Julio Jones double covered, trying to throw it high to him and overthrowing everybody. They got other weapons. They got to learn to utilize those other weapons. And you don't know if that was Ryan or if that was Sarkisian's call. But it looked to me a couple of times in the red zone at the end, he was throwing the ball to Jones come hell or high water, and it didn't matter if there were three or four players on it.
John, let's start with Le'Veon Bell's holdout in Pittsburgh. What do you make of the decision by Bell and his agent not to report this week and the reaction that it has caused in the locker room?
I've never seen a reaction like that in a locker room, guys. And I've been, 1977 was my first camp, even back when players would say anything to anybody in the media, didn't worry about the repercussions. They never talked about money like that openly. Now, they would say it among themselves, you know, what in the world is he thinking? That kind of deal. Le'Veon Bell's a running back. He's going to make $14,855,000 a week. Because of his position and because of the workload he's carried, and he's had a couple of suspensions, and I don't know if that's figured into the Steelers' decision not to give him a long-term deal, but I think if he tries to play it out this year, come in, so it's 10 games in, you can still be vested. If he showed up then, he would be persona non grata. And he thinks he's going to go out somewhere next season and get a monster deal, a running back getting a mega deal with a monster signing bonus. I just don't buy it. I think if you got a chance to make $14 million, come in and make it. Do what you got to do to be great again, because the careers can be over so fast, and he knows that, but I'm just amazed. And when he comes in, I will say this. I don't think there'd be lingering hard feelings. Players don't always like each other, but they play hard for each other. I think once he's in there, he talks to his teammates within an hour, that'll be the past.
I think it's interesting. Things have gotten kind of complicated on this Le'Veon Bell thing. Aditi Kinkawabla from NFL Network, who's based in Pittsburgh, points out, she tweeted this yesterday, I thought it was very good. Le'Veon Bell's teammates have had his back through one arrest, two suspensions, and two off-season holdouts. They've had his back through his showing up late to a playoff walkthrough, his threatening retirement, and his strip club video. Let's not suddenly forget that. So it's not as if they haven't given him a chance. And on the and we read this last night. We're talking about it via text. Jeff Schwartz, the former player, wrote, "This is not a situation where Le'Veon Bell could get more money right now." And the players know that. So he's not holding out for a new contract, in which case maybe they would back him, as is traditionally done.
This is it.
He cannot negotiate new money until after this season.
I read where they can negotiate that $14 million deal on Twitter through, like, Pro Football Talk or something.
Look, according to Jeff Schwartz, I read that column, too. He's saying that once they've given him the franchise tag, there's no room to get more money immediately. So essentially, you're asking the offensive lineman to not criticize a guy who's going to sit out a year in order to make more money from another team.
Next year.
And not that team. So it's hard to ask an offensive line group to be okay
with that. There's more nuance to it than just a guy holding out for more money, in which case I think it's reasonable to think players would not have come out. This is a different this is not just a straight out holdout for a better contract.
And remember, he can't sit out and be unrestricted. He's got to come in there so he can get his last six games or whatever it is so he can be vested. Then he could be unrestricted.
How good could the Steelers be without him and with James Conner?
We don't know. Remember when D'Angelo Williams had to play for them and he was in his 30s and he came out in the first game, had more than 100 yards? I'll bet you James Conner has a really good game Sunday. And then if he does, then that's going to make Bell look even worse. I think what Bell's shooting for, he wants to be traded. His agent has gone public. He knows the Steelers don't like that. They've tried everything. It hasn't worked. Now they think doing this, maybe it will force a trade.
A DC, is it Bakhtari is the agent? Have you had much dealings with him? I did over Maurice Jones-Drew, and I didn't find him to be exceptionally palatable.
No, I have not had any. I heard him this week on NFL radio, and I thought at the time, this is the wrong tactic. During Aaron Donald and Khalil Mack's contract controversies, their agents said nothing publicly. You didn't see things leaking out that people put a lot of stock in, because GMs today, they don't like you doing it in the media. and he fired the first salvo. And Kevin, I guarantee you, Kevin Colbert, the GM, does not like it. Neither do the Rooneys.
And Mike Tomlin said, DC said something like, I want to talk to them about his role. And Tomlin yesterday said, I don't talk to agents about players' roles. I talk to players about players' roles.
We don't want him touching the ball 400 times again. Well, then don't come.
Yeah. You don't get contractual allowances based on for your usage. There are incentives. Get to the point where you can negotiate a contract and negotiate incentives based on play time, carries, whatever.
To the phones. Let's go to Tanner up on line one. Hey, Tanner.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Great.
My biggest question is, I missed a couple of the games in the preseason, and I've heard from y'all that, Marcus Mariota was struggling with timing and rhythm with his receivers. I was wondering if you think he's going to have that worked out against Miami, or what it's going to take for him to get that worked out.
Well, that's the big question. Uh-huh. And look, he was 11 for 18 in the preseason. Yeah, I mean, he was fine. There were two throws that really caught our attention where he missed Corey Davis badly. What was the first one? The second one was Tampa Bay. The first one, I'm guessing, was in Pittsburgh. Lacked conviction.
Yes.
Didn't seem like they were on the same page, which led to questions for LaFleur yesterday, who said, what was the quote, Hutton? Indecisiveness is ineffectiveness, basically. You cannot be indecisive. Trust your training. Trust what you see and play. You cannot hesitate. And that's one of the big questions going into this game. They can't afford, John, to have those kind of incompletions that he threw to Corey Davis twice in the preseason, which were probably, one of them was a touchdown killer. That'll kill you in a regular season game.
Doesn't it seem like when you have a new coach, new coordinator, new system, new everything, that a quarterback should play more in preseason? Tom Brady, because he missed the offseason, played more in preseason than he usually would. So maybe Mariota's going to struggle early with the system. Maybe he'll come back and throw five touchdown passes. I picked the Titans to win the game because I think they will. And I think Mike Vrabel and Dean Pees will have pass rushers all over Ryan Tannehill. But it just seems to me when you have a new system that the quarterback might start slow.
John, we go next to Dave on line two. Hey, Dave.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. John, I really respect your viewpoints. You're old school, and I like what's going on. Watched that game last night at the first, and when they called that defensive tackle for his body weight on the quarterback, I turned the TV off. I mean, they're just ruining football totally, guys. They've got to quit making so many rules and get with it now.
Dave, you're not the only one that thinks that way, because the TV ratings were down, and there were a lot of reasons to turn it off, but you missed at least an exciting, poorly played but exciting finish. And no matter how, I love football. I love college football. I love the NFL. No matter how bad it gets, I'll still watch it. They're great players. They're going to be good teams. It was a bad way to start the season. And really, I'm not saying they're going down, but it seems like they only got one way to go. And hopefully the Sunday night and the Monday game will be a lot better than this one, and the officials won't throw as many flags to slow it down and make it even worse.
John, let me get a few picks from you. Let's start with the AFC South and the Colts hosting the Bengals. How do you think it goes in Andrew Luck's return?
I picked the Bengals. I'd love to see Andrew Luck come out and light it up, but, man, what a story that would be. But I don't see it, not enough talent right now, so I went with Cincinnati.
I know you're going Patriots over Texans, right?
Patriots over Texans, I did.
And how about Jacksonville's matchup?
I picked the Giants to win. A lot of firepower, new coach, a lot of enthusiasm in the organization. I think they'll do something to Blake Bortles. I think they'll stop the run. I think Eli Manning or Saquon Barkley will help them win that game by outplaying Leonard Fournette.
A big matchup in the AFC West, Chargers hosting the Chiefs. A lot of media picking the Chiefs, a lot of media picking the Chargers to be a big team this year. Do you buy either team?
As I keep talking about the Chargers not having a home field advantage, I think that will hurt them. I picked them to beat the Chiefs in this game because I don't see 20,000 Chiefs fans buying tickets. to that 30,000 seat stadium. So it might be 15-15, but I don't see any situation where the Chargers are going to have a home crowd that helps them do the kind of things other home crowds help their teams.
I can't wait to see Joey Bosa chase Mahomes. Give me a highlight reel of the snaps that happens.
John, Packers hosting the Bears.
Packers on the Bears. I think, Aaron, we're all talking about Khalil Mack. You know, I don't think there's any way he's going to come out and light it up considering how much he's missed, but I think Aaron Rodgers will come out and light it up, and Packer fans will be thinking they're going to the Super Bowl.
Two games on Monday night. First, Sam Darnold makes his debut. Is he going to be the talk of the weekend by winning a road game at Detroit?
No, I think Matthew Stafford will outplay Sam Darnold. It's unfair to expect great things from a rookie quarterback taking over a bad team. I think the Lions will win it handily.
I think Detroit is one of the more interesting storylines in the league in terms of kind of like the Titans. New coach. We don't know exactly what they are yet.
They think they have a run game.
They've got a run game finally, hopefully. I've got Kerryon Johnson in both in two leagues. I think they're going to be very interesting to watch.
And a big battle in the Bay, Raiders and Rams. Interesting matchup there, old school versus new school, coaching-wise.
I can't wait to see John Gruden, the crowd, everything about that. But I picked the Rams to go to the Super Bowl, so I'm picking the Rams to win that game.
John, thank you for swapping some times with us today with what we have going on here in downtown Nashville. And we will review week one and preview week two with you next week.
Safe travels.
Guys, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Good luck to Mike Vrabel and the Titans. And you guys have a great weekend.
Yep. Thanks, John.
John McClain. He joins us every Tuesday and Friday here on the Midday 180.